and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 6th of November 2011. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Julie Raby and Rev Stan. We're going to start by talking about Inadmissible Evidence, which is John Osborne's 1964 play, The Don Mar, and it starring Douglas Hodge as Maitland, a rather down-at-heel solicitor, although he does seem to be living in rather posh quarters in London. And his, life and loves. Rev Stan, tell us more about it.
Yes, this is about solicitor Bill Maitland. It opens with a mock trial where he is on trial for having a mediocre life, and he's basically putting up all the evidence against himself. And then it, my interpretation is then the play then follows sort of like a day and a half or a couple of days in his life, almost as if like it's like, I've told you this is the, you know, my case for the prosecution, and now here's the evidence for that case for the prosecution. He's a fascinating character. I mean, he's full of self-loathing, as you'd expect from John Osborne. I mean, this is meant to be the sort of the almost semi-biographical play. And he seems in a permanent state of anxious anger. He snaps at everybody. He spends the whole play pushing everybody away, like his colleagues, his family, his lovers. It's almost like he's absolutely terrified of terrified about how honest he feels about himself and his life. And it sounds like a bit sort of like Dowdy in that, but it's actually very, very funny. It's very witty. This is very much Douglas Hodge's play. The rest of the cast don't really get a look in. They're sort of just like pawns, really. And it's very, very amusing. And you have to really, really concentrate because his delivery is so fast. It's so fast paced. If you blink, you've missed the next two lines. You just barely get a chance to sort of think about anything. And it's one of those plays that I think would benefit going back and seeing again, just because you could then get more out of it and enjoy even more of the lines. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very, very funny. I mean, for the subject matter, could potentially be very depressing, but it's very well done. It's done in an amusing and witty way. And regardless of whether you like Maitland or not, it is very entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, for a sort of solicitor who makes out that he's doing very badly, he does actually seem to function reasonably well, and it's quite interesting that, you know, for all his dowdiness, he seems to be still quite attractive to the women in his life. One of the interesting pieces of casting here is I think it's Karen Gillan, who it's his stage debut, I believe. And she's of course Doctor Who's assistant, if anyone's interested in that. Julie, what did you think of this play?
Oh, I thought it was fascinating. I kind of got a bit lost in it as well because it's so intense. I thought Douglas Hodge's performance was absolutely amazing, and I would have liked to have seen Karen Gillan do some more because I thought she was very good in it as well. I found I was getting kind of sometimes a bit confused with the surrealism of the whole piece and what was reality and what wasn't. But I thought it was a really amazing piece, particularly that central performance. I was sat at the side of the stalls and I had a bit of a blind spot. I could see what was going on behind the screen, but people next to me said I wasn't missing very much, but there was obviously something happening behind as well.
Yeah, there was a certain amount of activity behind there. You occasionally saw into the background, into the backdrop, and it. You also several times when his daughter is mentioned, she appears in silhouette in the second half. It was quite interesting the way it did go surreal. You got the same client coming in over and over again, but with a different name each time, and you weren't sure whether it was it was a different woman or he was just imagining it. And one of his sort of put upon clerk, or his put upon pupil, it should be. He comes in as a sort of homosexual, and that was quite a clever bit. And that's Al Weaver, who's a rather interesting young actor. Coming in, oddly enough, you're saying that Karen Gillan should have done more. On the night I saw it, one of the actresses became indisposed and she had to take over. She took over in the second half. She wasn't seen, but I was sitting in front and I saw her through the glass, actually with the script in her hand, because she wasn't she didn't need to be seen. So she just had a script in front of her, which I noticed.
I must admit, with Karen Gillan, I really didn't get that casting at all, because I thought her character, I thought she was a bit too poised to be convincing as someone who'd been taken in by Maitland and become his lover. And I thought she was just a little bit too, what's the word? She seems
she's
too confident.
She's a bit too self-assured, isn't she? We know her from her television personality.
Yeah.
And so any time she gets angry and Scottish at you, you do feel that she's going to... You know, overpower the situation, and it is a bit. It's not entirely convincing, but I mean, it's not. It's possibly due more to our way we think about her than the way she actually acted.
I don't watch Doctor Who, so I've not seen her in anything before, so I don't have that preconceived idea. So
thought that's how we're seeing the character from Doctor Who, and. Because she has that face, doesn't she, and the way she kind of responds to other characters. So it was quite interesting for me seeing that. I didn't kind of really see her as a different character.
Right, we'll move on now to a small play at the Riverside Theatre. This is Round-Heeled Woman, starring Sharon Gless, who's the... possibly most famous for Christine Cagney in Cagney and Lacey, or if you're slightly younger, she's the hero's mother in Burn Notice. Julie, you saw this. Tell me about this. It looks rather interesting. A woman who's puts out a personal ad at the age of 67.
Yeah. It was really interesting in that small space, actually, seeing somebody like Sharon Gless. What she's playing is a woman called Jane Jusker, who's an English teacher, who puts an advert in the New York Review of Books, which says, "Before I turn 60 next March, I would like to have a lot of sex with the man I like. If you want to talk first, Trollope works for me." And, of course, there's a play on the word Trollope throughout, because she's meaning Andrew Trollope. And there's always also a reference to Trollope's character, Miss Mackenzie, who keeps coming into the piece. And it is kind of quite erotic at times, but it's played with such humour. It's very, very funny. And it's lots of little stories, flashbacks and the moment. As Jane goes to meet these different men, and has sex with them. And what's really interesting is Sharon Gless is on the stage all the time, even the costume changes on the stage. So it's, quite an intense piece. It's an hour and 40 minutes with no interval. But for me, the time flew by. And I absolutely love Cagney and Lacey. So that was the big draw for me to see Sharon Gless. But she soon kind of became this character, Jane Jusker, for me. I stopped seeing Cagney and I sort of saw this character. So it was very, very funny. It was worth it. And I thought, I liked the way they did tell the story with this kind of flashbacks to Trollope, but flashbacks to her own childhood. It was a story about a relationship with her son as well as these men. So it was a fascinating piece of theatre. And it's the first time I've ever been to the Riverside Studio, so that was quite nice to see the studios as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's rather a fascinating story, and also the, I mean, it is one woman show, isn't it? Is just one person on stage?
It is
a supporting cast, okay.
Yeah, which I was pleased about, actually, because that really worked, the way she interacted with the other characters. So there was three men and two more women in the piece with her. So that then gave it a context, and they were playing, you know, they were playing lots of other roles, the other actors and actresses, whereas she was playing this one character. So again, you know, you got the humour as characters change character, and some of the men were in drag at one point. And you could see that the young lover became the son. So there was that going on as well, which kind of added to it.
Yeah, I noticed that the two of the other actresses are Beth Cordingley and Jane Burtish, so that looks rather promising, actually.
Absolutely, they were great.
Okay. Right, we're now going to talk about Hamlet at the Young Vic. This stars Michael Sheen as Hamlet and is directed by Ian Rickson. Now, this, I believe, is for Ian Rickson's first ever Shakespeare production, and it's a rather interesting piece. It sets the play in what we'll call a mental health facility. We probably wouldn't call it a mental hospital or a lunatic asylum. It is some kind of mental health facility. There is a certain amount of security and the odd locked gate behind the scenes. You see in a slightly off, so they certainly can't easily get in or out, although some people do get released at the beginning. The idea is that Hamlet is a patient in this. We're not sure if he is the real Hamlet or whether he's a patient who is just sort of acting the whole play out almost in his head. In this idea, Claudius becomes sort of the doctor. And Polonius is, I couldn't work out whether he was a sort of trustee, a nurse, or another mental health person. And this, there is this problem that I had with the play, which was this whole setting. Because although it worked very well, there's the first soliloquy that Hamlet does is often, which goes, that this too solid flesh would melt Thor and resolve itself into a dew, is a beautiful piece of poetry, and is often done as a beautiful piece of poetry. But actually, if you do it naturalistically, it works a lot better, because you've got these stops and starts, you've got these sort of rather intense bits where he's going, oh God, God, you know, a beast that wanted reason would have mourned longer, and things like that. So it stops and starts. The problem with doing it like that, though, is that you colour the performance. He is mad from the start, and there's the idea that you know, he could be sane and normal at any time is thrown out of the window. Now, in this play, we get that kind of stop-start, the sort of the flashes of intensity and anger from Michael Sheen. And he is, and of course he is in this, because he is in some kind of mental health facility, he is mad from the start. We just don't know how mad he is, how out of control he is. So, and almost everybody is out of control and slightly mad. You have Ophelia, played by Vinette Robinson, who is, it much more believably becomes mad because, well, she might be mad to start off with. So that works quite well. But at other times, this whole idea of the mental health facility got in the way of the play, because you start questioning, well, what exactly is Gertrude doing here? Is she really his mother? Is she someone pretending to be his mother? There are lots of questions. And those questions, although they're nice things to talk about afterwards, they get in the way of the actual play, I thought. And it goes from being, you know, potentially this done with something more conventional, just in a more conventional way of telling the play, it could have been a great Hamlet. It's a decent enough Hamlet. It might even be a good Hamlet. I saw it I think we saw it together. So we saw it at a very early early stage of previews. So hopefully any niggles there might be can get ironed out. There are one or two performances that are a bit iffy, and hopefully they'll get picked up in the future. But it's a very good cast. I mean, you've got James Clyde as Claudius, you've got Sally Dexter as Gertrude, Hayley Carmichael playing Horatio. You're not sure if it's she's a man or a woman, but it doesn't really matter in this. And you've got a very nice performance by Michael Gould as Polonius. What did you think about this, Rev Stan?
Well, for the first half, I was unsure. I got to the interval and I thought, well, there's bits of this I really like, but there's bits of it that I'm really not sure about. And I completely take your point about the whole idea of it being set in a mental hospital. I found a bit overwhelming in the first half, and I was spending so much time thinking about that it was a distraction. But I think it came together in the second half, and by the end of it, I absolutely loved it, and I thought it was great and refreshing to see a different take on it. I mean, I completely take the point about the mental hospital setting being a distraction, but I like the fact that it gives you different things to talk about. There's so many sort of fairly straight up and down the line productions of Hamlet. It's nice just to see something step out that does work. I mean, yes, it had flaws. Not everything worked, but there were some brilliant parts to it. I mean, I know it's been done before, but I thought it was interesting having there was no ghost. Hamlet plays the ghost, or Michael Sheen played the ghost, so it was almost like this dual personality, this sort of like split personality.
I believe it was done before by Jonathan Pryce in a royal court production of it some years ago.
But I thought that worked very well in the context. The other thing that I another friend that was also there that I hadn't sort of, because I really wasn't sure about Horatio. I felt that Horatio just felt like a real spare part in the first half. But then a friend that I was with turned around and said, well, perhaps Horatio's a figment of Hamlet's imagination. And actually that sort of on reflection worked, because Horatio really wasn't interacting very much with many of the other characters or with Hamlet really. And so that was a kind of a nice idea. And I liked it as it got more and more nightmarish as it went on, particularly in the second half. And you had a lot of characters coming back as other characters, but still, like, for example, this is a spoiler. If anybody doesn't want to know, just obviously stop listening now. But the dead Polonius comes back and plays the priest that officiates over Ophelia's burial. And you see this moment where Hamlet sort of almost recalls, because he sort of recognises the bloody murdered Polonius that he killed in the first half. And then likewise, Ophelia rises up from the grave and becomes Osric. And I like this sort of, like this sort of, it was almost becoming like a nightmare for Hamlet. And there is one final twist at the end, but I don't think we should reveal that really, but I did quite like the final sting in the tail.
Yeah, it does kind of put it in. I mean, to a certain extent, it's not. They could be interpreted that it's not in actually in sort of Hamlet's mind. It's actually all in Horatio's mind, and that because Horatio is sort of observing a lot of things and only occasionally interacting with everybody. That's a slight thought, but I mean, yeah, there's lots of talk to talk about this. Lots of decent production and lots of decent performances. The thing about Michael Sheen, of course, is you just wish it would have been a great performance, because you know he can give a really great performance, and he's gone for the interesting performance rather than the great performance, and it's a slight disappointment, I think.
Well, I wasn't disappointed at all, and what I mean, I loved it for the fact that it completely distracted me from the fact that he's too old in my eyes to be playing Hamlet, and I know. Go on about that a lot, but that thought didn't even cross my mind. So I thought that was good, because it distracted me from that. I'd like to see it later in the run and sort of see how it sort of beds in, because I think this one's going to sort of grow. I'm also very curious to see what the critics make of it. I think press night is Wednesday. I know it's divided people so far. There's been a lot of stuff on Twitter, and I think it seems to be a Marmite Hamlet. I think you either love it or hate it, and I think it might divide critics in the same way, but I predict that there will be some people, I predict that it will get some very good ratings, and I think it will also get some very bad ratings as well.
Yeah, I mean, one thing additionally I would like to point out is one of the things you can tell about a quality of a Hamlet is what I call the cut. Hamlet normally is 4.5 hours. It's a ridiculous length of play, and what you have to do is cut it down. And I thought this cut is very good, this, you know, it shaves quite a lot off. You're missing, you know, a few scenes, you're missing quite a lot of characters, but it actually did it very well and very logically. So it was quite a pleasure to see that. You know, you say, well, yeah, okay, they cut that, but that's okay because it doesn't matter. They've shaved it off quite nicely. Mm. There was a mistake, I think, on the first night that we saw it, where the tannoy didn't work properly, and I don't know if that was intentional.
Yeah,
there was what the scene with Claudius is doing his praying, and we lost practically everything he said because perhaps because the tannoy wasn't working, and perhaps because it might even have been intentional that we didn't hear exactly what he said, but because the idea is that he can be heard, they rewire the tannoy so he can actually be heard as he's speaking to himself in a back office.
Going back to what you were saying about how it's nicely cut, it gets a bonus point from me because it cuts down the play within the play. One thing I find very irritating about Hamlet, even though it's my favourite play, is the way that it is when productions do the play within the play, where they do the mime first and then they do the same thing over again. It's very much, I think, a very typical 16th century thing. It's like, you know, like this is the story. And we'll tell you the story again. And I always found that really irritating. And I do love it when you get a production where they just cut it and they just do the play within the play just the once. They either do it as a mime or they do it as a spoken piece, and that's it. So it gets a bonus point for that from me.
I think they also cut speech. I pray you, you know, the big acting thing.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
So they cut that bit out of the play entirely, which is an odd choice. But well, you know, it fits in with that idea of, as you say, cutting the play down an awful lot. And you also get another line that's cut, which is to do with whether or not Horatio doubts Hamlet. And that's sometimes put in and sometimes not, and they make a I think a good choice in this one about that.
It may there is talk on Twitter that it may extend. My understanding is from fairly reliable sources is that all the actors are on contract for an extra week or fortnight after the official end of the run. So I would keep an eye out because I think it's pretty much sold out. The entire run now, but I would keep an eye out that if it does well, which every sign is that it probably will, that they'll extend it by a couple of weeks. So if you haven't got a ticket and you want to see it, that might be the best way to get one.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly hope it will do well, and hopefully lots of people will get to see it because it's although it has its flaws, it's too interesting not to see it, and you really would regret not seeing Michael Sheen doing this. He's always a good stage presence.
And doing it in such a small theatre as well, because he could have gone to a big theatre. I'm sure he could have had his pick of theatres, really. But to do it in a small theatre like the Young Vic, and it is a very, very intimate setting. You know, the front row seats are on the stage. You know, the actors are just there. So, yes, it feels like a real treat to see someone of his stature in such a small theatre.
You can follow this podcast at AYULTP on Twitter, the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast on Facebook, and on the web at ayu-londontheatre.org. Thank you. Goodbye.